My grief counselor died recently. He was so good, I didn't even care.
Oh, my word.
Huh? See, because he was a grief counselor.
No, I
get it. Just checking. Sometimes I'm just going to check. You get it, you know. Sometimes I'm not sure if you do. You know,
I do get it. I do get it, and I did like it.
But, however, Nate,
he doesn't like the fact that he liked it. He's hurt. He's disappointed in himself.
I feel like he was trying to not laugh at that, and then that made him laugh a little bit more.
Yes, you fine, both like, read me correctly.
Let it out. Let it out. It's a joyful time. You know, very Christmas-ish, kind of.
Oh, well, there were so many Christmas trees up in Brazil. I do feel like it is Christmas. I've already got my first Christmas tree up.
Ah, you're one of those people. I think December, it's got to be December. It's got to be in December. Like, you can't start in November.
No.
Was that made of...
Nobody could see that obviously, but Barreto did just grab his Christmas tree and try and shake it, and it...
Oh, we have hit some...
We've lost Medders.
Medders so upset him. With the tree, he's gone. He's frozen in midair. What
happened? While we try to wait till he comes back...
Yeah, what's my score? What's my score?
It was a 9.7, Nate.
Oh, wow! Okay. That's much higher than I was expecting, like an 8.8 or something.
No, I liked it. It was definitely of the quality of a 9. Wow. I really liked it, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a 10, you know, hence the decimal point, but
I like
I really
this. You're really using this decimal point system to your advantage now. I feel like there was some shakiness to begin with. I wasn't sure why you were like, because every week you were like, that is a 9.1. And I was like, I'll just give it a 0.1 every time. But no, I'll take that. That's very good. One of my highest in a long time.
One of your highest for a long time. But also, Nate, I think some things that played in your favour. You didn't tell me you Googled them beforehand, even if you did. You delivered it beautifully.
No, I learned. I got slapped on the wrist, both wrists, by both of you last week, and I won't be doing that for at least another week. So, and the other thing, what was the other thing that you said?
That you delivered it beautifully.
Oh, yeah. Delivery was pretty good. And I didn't practice it. Straight off the cuff. Well, off the cuff. I mean, obviously, knew the joke beforehand. But, but yeah. Good. Well, it's good to know.
What a great way to start the show. Welcome to the Padhawk, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I'm Lawrence Bretto, F1 correspondent and presenter.
I'm Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer.
Addy Soldier. I'm Nate Saunders, general editor at ESPN.
So there was a bit of tension there because I wasn't sure whether Medland had kicked back in with his internet, whether he's going to say anything.
And it's a bit of a delay, which is kind of funny. On my end, anyway. I don't know if it's the same for you, Lawrence. So this is going to be an interesting... And Medland is at one of the poshest hotels in Abu Dhabi, and his internet connection is ropey. I can't believe it.
There's a reason for that. It's because I'm sitting outside on the balcony overlooking the track trying to be cool, but it means that Wi-Fi doesn't quite stretch far enough, and I've got that really annoying problem of inside the hotel room is pretty damn cold because the aircon just won't stop working basically, but outside it's lovely and warm, so I want to sit outside, but then I lose you guys, so I might actually relocate during this pod. I might fight my way in through a very heavy glass door.
Do it. I think that'd be a great listening experience for everyone here in Medland, clattering through a glass door.
Also, I have stayed in that hotel many times. I agree, those doors are unnecessarily heavy. And also, you can very much get trapped on the balcony. Don't do that, Medland.
This is great chat.
it's
a fantastic
chat. Well, and I'll paint the picture and then I will fight with the door. So I'm overlooking the final sector, like the two left-handers. So the second one's where Latifi shunted last year. And... they've just put up some sponsorship advertising on the bridge between the two hotel buildings over the track. We had a yacht reverse into the harbour a bit ago and send off a foghorn. That was fun. And I think I saw Sebastian Vettel running the track about half an hour ago, but I'm not certain it was him. So
great.
That's that. Oh, and it's dark and the floodlights are on and it looks cool. So there you go.
It was either Sebastian Vettel or just a cool. Blonde guy. Just a generic blonde man.
I'm not sure how much we learned from that, Nate.
I think I would say, of all the things I've learned in my life, that probably is on the lower end of things that have been learned. But hey, I mean, you know, at least we learned that there's balconies in the Yas Marina Hotel, which is pretty cool, I have to say. I've never stayed in there myself. I'm not as baller as you two, but it does look amazing. Like, as a place to actually sit and watch cars, because I think people do that, don't they, for testing. You can actually sit like for the tire test and the cars come underneath you, which is pretty amazing. But I imagine for the race, like, imagine being there last year and, like, for all that going down. I'm not sure if it would have been better to watch. Probably been better to watch on TV, you'd think, wouldn't you? Like, with everything that happened.
I think if you were trying to stay on top of the nuances of what was going on in the race, you definitely would have wanted to have a TV at least nearby. But it's a pretty... Oh, we've lost Medland.
Medland's actually just disappeared. Oh, well, this is now a two-man show, so we'll just carry on. I don't know what he was doing. Like, he knew the internet was going to be ropey. He knew, like, he literally said, I took the choice where we're doing a podcast on Wi-Fi. I'm going to sit where the Wi-Fi's less. Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. Let's power through. He'll come back. We can chastise him. It's unbelievable. Absolutely.
This was the most Medland thing.
Oh, it was. If people are listening to this, like, this is classic. He might not even listen to this when he's editing it back. I don't even know. But he had two options in front of him. Two options. One of them was, it's going to be slightly cold, I can put a jumper on, and I can record inside professionally, or I can sit on a balcony where I know the Wi-Fi is broken. Oh, man. Brilliant. Absolutely. It is. It is. The leaps of logic that Chris takes are fantastic.
It is brilliant.
It is absolutely great. Gutted not to be going out there this week. Tell me, what are you most looking forward to? Because for people listening, Abu Dhabi is, I know the racetrack's not the best, but as a venue, it can be quite fun, right? To be out there. It has an end of school year kind of vibe to it, doesn't it, every year?
Yeah, definitely. I was talking to people in Brazil and they were saying how much they used to love Brazil being the final race of the season.
Yeah, because I can totally get that, actually.
It delivers epic races, doesn't it? And it's such a great carnival atmosphere. But actually, to be fair to Abu Dhabi, we've been going there now for the last race for a fair few years now. And it's a really nice venue, like you said. Location's great. Everyone's in a holiday mood. The weather's always good. The facility is great. I know the circuit hasn't always delivered the closest racing, but they made some changes, didn't they, to the track? And we obviously had that classic last year. And so I've got higher hopes that this will be a stronger end to this year. So yeah, I'm looking forward. I'm back for 24 hours in the UK while we're recording this podcast.
Yeah.
So I'm heading out tomorrow, but I'm looking forward to it.
There he is. Medders is back. We definitely didn't roast you when you were away, Medders. We definitely didn't. So
you never do you? You're always polite.
Yeah, it's all fine. It's all good. So we're just talking about Abu Dhabi. What are you most looking forward to? Because I'm not going to be there, obviously. So what are you most looking forward to about the weekend? Won't be as dramatic as 21, but what is it about Yas Marina that you like the most?
Oh, will it? I love the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi is great.
Yeah.
Famously,
it's better inside than outside.
You sound so good now, Medlin.
You do, and the connection's great. It's fantastic. Hope the aircon's nice and chilly.
It's a bit fresh. And is it echoey? I can hear myself echoey. It's echoey in here. Anyway. I'm going to really annoy you, Nate, but probably the thing I'm most looking forward to is karting on Thursday.
I knew it was going to be that. But to be fair, that is a good track. I've done that one before, and I beached it in the gravel one year, I remember, to the chagrin of many people, because it limited our time by a good 5 minutes while they fished me out of it. Christian Manat, who's one of the German journalists and takes karting very seriously, was actually very angry with me. He was like, Nate, you ruined my best laugh. I was like, I'm sorry, mate, I didn't mean to. I just spun off. He was like, why did you spin off there? I was like, I'm not very good, Christian, that's why. I'm just not very good.
Was it on purpose? Ruin his laugh.
Yeah, I mean 5 months later, you'll never guess what he did. He did something bad.
Medland and I had lunch at Alpine at the weekend, and a large chunk of the time spent over lunch, thanks to the train horn again, friend of the show, was that Medland spent a great deal of time talking about the karting.
God, I can imagine nothing else came up.
So we were meeting the new head of comms, Mario, lovely guy, stepping in for Lucy.
To be fair, if you're going to talk karting to anyone, a guy called Mario.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Another 9.7, I'll take it. Let's keep going.
But he does at least have a good reason for it, because if Medlin wins this race, Medlin would be driving a Formula One car.
Ugh,
like, how significant that is that?
Cool. I mean, that is quite significant.
That is incredible.
Give some context, but it's a competition I've been doing all year, and I've managed to miss every round that they've done this. Not that I would have been a contender, but I've not been
could
around.
Could have been someone.
I could have been somebody.
What was it? Reverend of the Makers. That's what I was going with there. Could have been a contender. No? Nobody else?
I think it's on the waterfront, isn't it? Marlon Brando?
Well, no, I was thinking of... Where? Could have been a contender. I could have been someone caught up in a rat race feeling like a no one.
Oh, yeah, that.
Heavyweight champion of the world. Anyway.
Anyway.
After that segue, I need to find... Alpine did send an email round inviting us to the karting and asking for everyone to respond if they want to do it, and it had the standings on it, right? And you said if I win, I get to drive an F1 car. But if I win and Stephanie Cox is second, I will miss out by 2 points.
Oh.
So wow. You need someone to help you then.
Yeah. So it's not going to happen.
Well, she's a former racing driver as well, so.
Current racing driver. Yeah, professional racing driver. Races in Asian Le Mans.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you do win, that's pretty impressive. And I will actually let you talk about it if you do get a Formula One.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
How many people are in the running for the Formula One test? That could be more exciting than the actual Sunday Grand Prix itself.
Technically, 4 of us.
Nice. That's pretty good.
Because there's Stephanie's on 60 points. I'm second on 51. Philip Horton is third on 41. And Albert Fabrega is fourth on 38, so he needs a big old switch. He needs to like win and have the rest of us not really finish. But he could.
That's got 2010 vibes to me. You've got 3 who are close, and then you've got like Lewis Hamilton. Basically, mathematically, he's in all the pictures, but he knows he's not going to win it.
Yeah, true. to be fair,
because Lewis was 25 points behind, wasn't he, in 2010? Going to Abu Dhabi.
Yeah, he needed chaos, didn't he?
Yeah, absolute chaos. History.
I was going to say, while there's a brief respite, I'm going to draw a line under the go-karting and talk about a very exciting race that happened this weekend in Brazil. And I do hope that we have got the only review that matters.
We do. We have it. It is sent in the group. I definitely didn't do it moments before we went live.
And this is just a Grand Prix review, right? No sprint chat.
Just the race, yeah.
If you've only got 1 minute to spare, wanna know who finished when and where, sit back, relax, cause we got you. Here's Nate with the 60-second review.
Hello, welcome to a very makeshift 60-second review. Hopefully it's a good one. Here we go. In tres, dos, one. First position was Russell George, new race winner. Congratulations. Welcome to the winner's circle. Second, Lewis Hamilton. I mean, I don't think he was actually pushing at the end, but don't at me. Third place, Carlos Sainz. Fourth position, not a happy bunny, not a happy camper, Charles Leclerc. Thought he should have been higher, probably. Maybe Ferrari should have let him pass. Who knows? I often rip on Fernando Alonso, but fifth position, that was pretty special. He's pretty damn good, isn't he? Sixth position, a vital sixth position for Max Verstappen. Absolutely crucial. Key result for Max. Sixth place, really important. And probably, you know, has turned his championship completely around. Very, very big, very, very important. Perez, you know, in seventh, but did the right thing and let Max through for sixth. Oh, wait, sorry. No, I've got that wrong. I've got that the wrong way around. But, you know, anyway, Ocon was eighth. He's French. Ninth, Bottas. He's Finnish. And tenth, Lance Stroll was there and he had a point. So that's fun. That's the top 10. Don't have time for anything else. Bye.
Wow.
Yeah, so I got a bit bugged down by the Max thing. The thing.
Well, it was quite a thing, though.
It was quite a thing. It was, if you were rating things, this would be a top thing.
This is a 10. Year. I mean, this if is, I was rated it, this is a 10.
This is the thing of the year, isn't it? The on-track thing. Not the other thing. Well, the off-track thing was also a Red Bull thing, but this is an on-track thing, and it's also a Red Bull thing.
interesting that Mercedes get a 1-2 and everyone's still talking about Red Bull at the end of the race.
Yeah, that is funny, isn't it? I did think that myself. Although, when Max won his first race in 2016, I remember everyone was talking about Mercedes, because that's when Lewis and... So, you know, it does happen like that sometimes, doesn't it?
So you're saying, it's only fair, is what you're saying.
I'm saying, it's payback time.
What Max was thinking.
He didn't care about this Monaco thing. He was like, no, don't care about that. Let's ruin their 1-2. Let's ruin it.
If you ask him for his reasons, he will explain that it goes back to that. He just didn't feel he got enough coverage.
What is the longest that either of you guys have held a grudge for? And was it 5 months and 15 races?
I'm honestly not sure I've ever held a grudge.
I don't think you have
definitely.
Either, actually.
I haven't ended it yet.
Oh, hello. Well, tell us more.
Well, I can't, because would that not be the end of the grudge?
Yeah, that would. Well, no, you're thinking of... I don't think that's how grudges work. I think you can talk about the grudge.
You can say the grudge exists.
Mentioning a grudge doesn't mean it stops existing. It means it's out there. It means people go, have you heard about Medlin's grudge against fill in the blank? Nate Saunders.
Blankety blank.
Well, no, I'm gonna leave it as unconfirmed. I'll let the rumours swirl.
how long's it run for?
I don't know yet. It's not finished.
No, up until...
When does it start?
Up until this point.
Can't give you this info. It'll be too obvious. I'll let you... What was Max said? I'll let you decide.
With a big grin on his face. I don't know if I buy the Monaco suggestion that's going around. I think it's incredibly far-fetched that Perez would have intentionally crashed.
There's no way he did that. he just wouldn't do that.
The story doesn't make sense, right? Because, you've got to assume he intentionally crashed. Even if he did, he doesn't then go and admit it to his two bosses and say, I intentionally crashed so that Ferrari could lock out the front row at the circuit that's the hardest to overtake on. I just don't buy it. If that's the reason, and it does seem like that's the reason that Max didn't let him pass, I think it's crazy. It's insane.
In a cross-cap era, where if you damage the car, that's really going to piss your team off, even more than normal. With the way he went in and shunted, like the risk of getting himself a grid penalty that then would have ruined his own race, I don't see it either, but it just seems to have a lot of legs at the moment, so I don't quite get how it's got there. And there's some quite impressive work going on from some people, like analysing every sort of sound from the throttle or looking at the throttle maps and stuff, but they don't do that for every single instance that's ever happened, because obviously the throttle map will not look good for a crash because you've done something wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But it'll be really interesting to see if that actually has any legs to it, or something that happened around Monaco has legs to it, because clearly it's like Max wouldn't deny it, but it just makes no sense. Like you say, I can't believe he would risk that.
Well, I think the key thing is, whether it's true or not, is that Max believes it to be true, clearly.
Mm.
So I think that seems to be the key point from it, is that I don't think it's true. And you're right about all these like internet sleuths that we have these days. There's people like, look, Perez's steering wheel at this frame is like slightly to the left, like not understanding how like understeer and oversteer work and how cars can step out on a driver and stuff like that. Like, I never get when people look at steering wheel inputs and outputs, like, because it's never a case that you're 100% driving the direction that the car is going. Sometimes you're correcting a snap or whatever. I don't know. It seems like it was put out there to destabilize Perez, or to everyone's talking now about like, did Perez intentionally like do it? And there's no evidence to suggest that he's that kind of driver. No. So I think I think it's crazy for a guy that's helped Max that much, and has played the number two role brilliantly, even if they don't call it number two role, he has played that role. It's just so disrespectful to him, disrespectful to Horner, disrespectful to the team. Like, the team have given him this record-breaking car this year, and Max is amazing. I'm not saying it's only because of the car, but like the car has helped. The car has helped him win. So I don't know, just absolutely crazy.
Just on that as well, like, it could well be Red Bull's partly Red Bull's fault that this all kicked off, because Max said he told them.
Yeah, that's true.
And his radio message said last summer, and I don't know if, because obviously he's speaking in English, but Dutch is his first language, whether he meant the summer we've just had or the summer before that. But whenever it was, he says he told them he would never do it. So they did then put him in the position to have to make a decision. You know, is he going to stand by what he said to them, or is he going to obey the order? Which you could then say, well, Red Bull instigated him then having that reaction. But like you said in that review, it's over sixth. Like,
yeah, like if it's first position, I get it. You know, it's like, oh, that's a win. It's a record. Like, you earn wins, but like sixth position, come on. Like, that's 2 points.
With the title done.
And you're helping, you're meant to be helping your teammate against Ferrari. Like, I just don't, there's nothing that makes sense about it. Nothing at all.
Save it for when it matters. Yeah. For that moment when, like, you're being told you're not allowed to overtake him for a win early next season or something, if that happens, then ignore them. Do the Seb with Multi 21. But when it just kind of seemed a strange way to use the card up. The only thing I can actually say about that as I talk it out is that you could argue he did it at a time where it had very little bearing on what was going on in terms of, you know, so with Checo, it was only 2 points it cost him. They're level on points going into the final race. It wasn't, you know, stealing a win from Checo, something like that. And he made the point and kind of, you know, it blows up now. It'll probably be a big talking point for the next few days. And then the season will finish and it will die down over the winter. Maybe becomes less of an issue than if, say, it was early next season and he nicks a win from him. And then Checo's livid and they completely fall out. I don't know.
I'm interested to see how Checo is going to react to this, though, because he was clearly frustrated. It clearly hurt him, and I think he's gone there, and I think he always knew that he would have to play a slightly second fiddle role just because of the performance differential between them. But I think he does also feel like if he's done all of, like we've said, he's done all of that helping for something so small. I think it was different if, you know, when Carlos and Charles asked twice, I think, if they could swap positions. I think it's different even for a podium to give up a podium for that. I thought it was interesting actually that Ferrari didn't even ask Carlos to do it. Like, they kind of managed it in that way, and probably a cleaner way of doing it.
And they were helped that Perez was behind Leclerc as well. Like, it was like, he's gaining points anyway. So I feel like they were like, look, like, it's okay. Like, you're going to gain on him as it stands, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think Checo, because we've seen this year, it takes him a bit of time to get over things like this.
Yeah.
So even if this is the last race, I still don't think the winter's going to be enough time for him to get over. Because if anything, I think it's going to stew over the winter. And then they'll probably have all sorts of conversations. But I do wonder now, he's going to have to wonder whether what anyone says, can he take it at face value now? Like, that's what I'm interested in. And he's come to the end of his career. He's obviously got this longer, slightly longer term contract at Red Bull. So he knows that to an extent he's got to play the game in some points. But also, it's the end of his career now. And he can probably afford to take a few more risks.
Yeah, and I think I found it really interesting that Red Bull handled it the way they did. Like, Horner came out, didn't they, after, and was like, no, we've talked about it, it's all fine, and Max is going to help Checo in Abu Dhabi. And I was just like, I mean, there was no like public criticism of Max after, despite the fact that it was completely warranted and everyone would have totally understood that. And I feel like now, even if Max does help Perez to second in Abu Dhabi, you know, I don't think he will. Like, I feel like asking Max to move over is just like against his DNA. Then this clearly kind of suggests that. If I was Perez, I'd be like, why did he make it so difficult in the first place? And I think that the radio message after the race from Perez, what was it? He said he showed who he really is. I think that was really telling. Because I know those are said in the heat of the moment, but that is going to linger with Perez for a long time, I think. Like, when it came down to it, when he had to do me the smallest of favors, he didn't even budge. And then he did it, like, maybe he does it in Abu Dhabi when it's like, oh, like, you know, Red Bull expected him to. I think it's very interesting. And next year, I think Max is going to need Checo's help at some points, because I think it's going to be much closer, especially if Red Bull can't develop that car, you know, especially if Ferrari and Mercedes are able to kind of keep the season up. So it'll be really interesting. And I'd love it if Perez turned around and was like, nah, next year, like, there's a moment. And he's like, you know what? I helped him. I let him win in Spain. You know, I helped him, massively in Qatar and Abu Dhabi last year, or in 21, as it will be then. Just tells him where to go. And like you say, like, Lawrence, what's he got to lose? Like, at the end of his career, he's like, fine, get rid of me if you need to, but I'm not helping the guy.
And he also genuinely thinks he can win the championship. Mm. I think a lot of racing drivers talk about, you know, they enter the sport, they want to win. But he genuinely thinks he can do. I think he's seen enough things this year to make him think that he can. So if at the start of the year he gets a few runner results in his favour and he thinks he's got the stronger chance, then he's gonna do what's best for him. That's what he's going to do. I think it's really interesting what you just said, Nate, about the threat from everyone else. George and Lewis are pretty much on par at the moment in terms of pure performance. So if they're going to get in the mix and one of the Red Bulls isn't kind of competing at the right level, they can't afford for Checo not to, or Max, for them not to work together. They just won't be able to afford that next year.
Yeah. That's a really interesting point, actually.
This is far too serious, this chat.
Isn't it? Formula One. I was about to say, fair play to George Russell. Like, let's actually talk about Mercedes, because that was pretty epic performance from him across the weekend.
So immense. I managed to get a little interview with him in the pit lane after the race. So I'd kind of done
that. I saw that. You got hijacked by Red Bull's favourite journalist, didn't you? Ted Kravitz.
Yeah, I did. So I was kind of like a bit annoyed that I hadn't done a very good job of getting interviews live. And then I thought, wander that into the pit lane to see what was going on. And Merck were doing their like celebration photos and spraying champagne and stuff. And nice. Yeah, they were having a good old party out there. And then you could hear the crowd anyway making a lot of noise. But the crowd couldn't see them because the track's below the pit lane at that point. So they couldn't see up there. And George then went over to the pit wall to like salute them. The noise was incredible. It was so loud. I've never heard anything like it. And then Lewis went and joined him. It got even louder. It was just amazing. But as George came back, I was just in the right place at the right time, managed to like grab a couple of questions to him. And then, yeah, Ted stuck his mic in and camera to pick up the second answer, I think. And then as George walked off, he interviewed him a bit longer. But he was covered in stank of champagne, like absolutely drenched. But he was clearly loving it. I don't think he cared about, you know, being overshadowed by Red Bull or whatever. Like, what mattered to him is he'd won the race and he was celebrating with his team. Like, that was all that he cared about. And then what was funny, though, was post-race, you guys might have heard it as well, in the press conference, he got asked how he was going to celebrate. And he said he'd just been chatting to Carlos about it, and they were on the same flight direct to Dubai. And it's like a 15-hour flight. So they were saying they were going to sort of celebrate on the plane. And Carlos was like, yeah, drinks are on me. And George was like, well, aren't they free on the flight? And he's like, yeah, that's why they're on me. But then I was on that flight with them coming over here, except I never saw George. So Jess saw Carlos when we were getting bags. We saw Charles on it, Pierre, I say on it, like getting on it and getting off it because they were in first class. It was Charles, Pierre, Fernando, who else was there? Alex Albon. I'm forgetting someone else as well. There was a lot. And a bunch of team bosses and stuff. So they could have had a heck of a party on it. But I'm wondering if George even made it or if their party kicked off too much in Brazil and they came later.
It sounds suspiciously like he didn't make the flight. He had to make some later arrangements. He was like, guys, get me on a different flight. I need some time in bed. But also, what was great about that win, you know, first wins are always kind of special anyway, but like completely on merit, like every single part of it, you know, sprint race, brilliant. The race itself was fantastic. I think the only like blot on it was spinning out of qualifying, but really like that in a weird way, like really helped him because it put him in a good position for the sprint. But from that point on, he was fantastic. So yeah, I totally forgot
he did that.
Yeah. Same. it was only like so much happened. Like with K-Mag getting the pole. And then I looked back at it and I was like, that was a pretty, I'm not saying he did it intentionally, but sometimes like bad moments like that, it's like, all right, well, you know, let's make it a good moment. Yeah, I know you're looking at me, man. It's like, say something controversial.
In 5 months, Lewis doesn't move over for George. And he's like, it was all on Brazil.
Him and Max become unlikely friends.
Well, because that's what happened with Multi-21, wasn't it? Was that it was Webber's start in 2012.
In Brazil.
Shut the door on Vettel into turn one. That's right, in the title decider. And Seb had to back out of it, lost a few more places, and then got hit a few corners later. And he always felt, yeah, Mark put me in jeopardy. It's his fault. So he remembered that. And it was only two races later, but it was a whole season later in Malaysia. He was like, well, screw this then. I'm not helping him and letting him win.
It's funny, isn't it? And I think Lawrence is so right about that off-season. Like, you've got so much time to just sit and stew over stuff. So
make plans.
Yeah, and also...
Evil plans.
And also, I think the repetition of coming back to the paddock, like, must ease some of that because you come back to the paddock and, like, you know, after a while, you're like, oh, I've done this a bit now. I'm less angry. But you don't see people for a while. Those things can build up. So Multi 21 is a really good example. And then Vettel, didn't he? He basically doubled down on it at the next race and was like, no, Webber didn't deserve to win. Like he was like, I'm not even pretend that I did it by mistake or whatever. I just didn't think he deserved to win. I actually, in a weird way, like, I gained respect for Vettel doing that, because he didn't BS about it. He was like, no, I did it, and I'd do it again. And I thought, yeah, like, fair play. Like, if you're going to do it. That's the thing with Max that I kind of was frustrating, but he didn't own any of it, really. He said, yeah, no, I explained my reasons. And it's like, explain them. Put them on the table. Like, let people decide. Like, be, like, front up about it and actually say. And I think I would have, even if the reasons are complete nonsense, I would have been like, all right, like, he said it and he's put it out there. But he didn't. So.
Back to George Barreto.
Sorry. I'm just ranting.
I very much enjoyed that segue, though. So that was nice. I thought that George was mega all weekend. I thought his sprint performance actually was the better one, because rarely have we seen anyone overtake a Red Bull on pure performance this year. I know Max was struggling, but that aside, I thought the way they battled in that race was really good. I thought Max gave him plenty of space. George gave him plenty of space. I thought it was a really nice battle, very different to the battle that Lewis and Max had on race day.
They need to take the magnets out of Max and Lewis's cars, don't they?
Yeah, I know.
Because there's just those two guys, like, incapable of racing cleanly against each other. Like, I find it really fascinating. I think that if that's anyone else, like, it's not Lewis or it's not Max, the other one, they don't hit. I just think that's the way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that would happen.
Exactly on that, then. Question. Penalty, right or wrong?
I was annoyed it was a penalty. I felt that, I don't know where Max could have gone.
I think, actually, and so I'm going to get a lot of abuse for this, I think the penalty was fair, because I think Lewis was far enough ahead. Look,
unless for the law, right, it was correct, wasn't it? Because the wheels weren't ahead. So I feel like in that sense, probably I'm wrong and there, but, like, annoying.
I suppose.
Yeah, sorry.
I suppose the way I look at it is, if you think you're going to crash, do you care enough if you're going to crash? Max knew, and he said as much afterwards, I knew that he was going to turn in. I wasn't going to give up. So what, like, there's going to be an accident. So if you are happy enough to have an accident, then fine, you're going to get that, and you're probably going to get a penalty, and you kind of just need to suck it up. I just kind of feel like in this particular scenario, the championship was done. Lewis was ahead. He could have had another go at another lap. Why did he do it? Why did he leave his nose in there? I just don't understand.
Go on, man, as you go first.
Well, I think partly for the reason you just said, because championship's done, like, he didn't need to worry. He didn't have anything to lose. And Max never changes, which is what I actually do quite like about it. It's like, you know, every single time what Max will do in that situation, he is not backing out. Doesn't matter if the title's on the line, doesn't matter if it's not on the line, he is staying there. And I agree that when he said, I knew he wasn't going to give me space after turn one, then he knew they were going to have an incident, and he was just trying to prove himself right. Which is something that I always used to criticise Felipe Massa for. Was it 2011 when he kept colliding with Lewis? And they were like magnets at that point. The amount of times that it was kind of, you're in a position where you might have an accident or not. Felipe had the high ground to say he was in the right, but also to let the accident happen, and would rather the accident happened than avoid it. I always think that's a bit silly from a driver. And yeah, maybe Max then could have jumped out the way a bit, but... also, you got to think it's probably setting a precedent if he did that. Next year, if Lewis is on it and we've got a repeat of 21, basically, and they're both fighting for the title, then Max has kept that marker in the sand that he's like, I'm not going to move. And Lewis has done the same. He's like, well, then I'm not going to open the door for you. So in a sense, I think it's perfect that they both did that and kept to what they've ended last year doing. But I think they both could also have been, if they both gave a little bit more each, then you don't get an incident, which is why I say no penalty. I think it's racing incident.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think letter of the law wise, I get what Lawrence said as well, though. Like, it was a small penalty anyway, like 5 seconds, really, when you're the fastest car or the second fastest car, like, pretty insignificant.
Yeah, because Daniel got 10 for when he punted Yuki out in Mexico, didn't he?
Yeah, and that was far more clumsy. Like, that was, like, just a clumsy move. And he got 3 places for what he did for Magnussen as well, right? So that was the same kind of thing going into a little gap that wasn't there. So, and that's like a, you know, three place grid. That's like probably 10, 15 seconds. Well, no, actually, I don't know, 5 seconds. I don't know, like, how it translates over, but it seems to ring true. I think what I really like about those two, and I think there's so much talk about Silverstone last year, right? But the thing with Silverstone that I always try and hammer home to people is that the reason that crash happened was exactly the same reason this collision in Brazil happened. Was because when Max sees Lewis in his mirrors, or Lewis sees Max in his mirrors, they both are now like, I'm not giving that, like, I don't like that guy. I'm not giving him the space. If it's Leclerc on the outside, or if it's Sainz, like, Lewis is a bit wider to the corner, or he's not pushed Sainz so wide. Like, it's just the two of them can't, I don't think, can race against each other like they race against other people. And I think that's why it made, like, that's why last year was so good, right? Because you had, to be honest, it was great. I think Lewis had to raise himself to Max's level when it came to overtaking. Not that he was worse, like better or worse than Max, but in terms of, Lewis didn't have that mindset before of, like, you're not coming, either we crash or you back out. Max has always had that, hasn't he? Like, even when he was moving under braking and all that stuff, and Vettel used to get annoyed and Raikkonen used to get annoyed. And Lewis basically got to a point where, I think it was after Imola, right, when Max pushed him off at turn one, and Lewis came back, apologized to the team and said, I'm never letting him do that again. And he never did. And I think that's why, like, it's been such a shame all those times this year, like Silverstone, Zandvoort, when we thought we're going to get Max v. Lewis again, and it just turned out that, you know, it wasn't really a wheel-to-wheel fight. I think it's box office. So I'm glad they still race like that. I know it's not the prettiest thing to look at when two cars collide, but, like, I'd rather that than two drivers that give each other loads of space and are really respectful. Like, you know, Max and Charles at the start of the season, you know, were very pally, weren't they? And I was like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Especially with Charles, I was like, dude, like, this guy, you've got to beat this guy at the championship. Like, you can't be all friendly with him. I don't care if you are friendly with him. Like, your mind has to switch around. You have to suddenly see this guy as, like, this is the guy, this is my obstacle to the championship. I think Lewis thinks that about Max, whether it's true or not next year, we'll see. But I think that's why Max is as good as he is and why Lewis is as good as he is, because that's how they race. So, yeah, anyway, that was quite a long serious preamble. So let me say something funny. Cars.
No pressure.
No, I know. Why do I put myself under pressure? This is terrible. I've got nothing to say.
Well, then you think of something while I ask Barreto what his highlight of Brazil was, because he was there and he was struggling with a bit of a cold. Yeah. And he's flown back to the UK before flying to Abu Dhabi, so that's going to help. But what was your highlight?
Oh, I'm starting to feel better, thankfully.
Good.
My highlight was doing a track cycle with Felipe Massa on the Thursday of the race weekend. Like, I've interviewed Felipe quite a few times now. I've done track walks with him around Interlagos before. But every time I go out on a bike with him, every time I go out with him, it's always something different. There's always something new to talk about. He's also just one of the nicest people in the Formula One paddock. He's got really thoughtful insight, I think, into various things. He isn't one of those pundits who just says dramatic things or aggressive things or goes hard just so that he can get a news line. I think he's good. So yeah, that was probably my favorite thing of the race weekend. And then the second good thing I did was I did the F1 Nation podcast. So I'm going to plug another podcast on here with Tom Clarkson and Damon Hill on Sunday night after the race. And what I enjoyed about that was kind of like probably a little bit of what your show is, Medders, when, like, you just walk around, you just grab people, have a quick chat to them, move on to the next thing. It's quite just see what happens. And I really liked that because there's no planning involved. You kind of just grab who you can.
So like this show. Good fun. No plan.
Well, yeah.
Just run in and do it. That sounds great. And I remember last year, Laz, you did a lot with Massa as well. As I remember, you did it on that balcony that overlooks the circuit. And I feel for him a bit, because every year he goes there, he gets asked the same question, doesn't he, about 2008. But he actually seems quite good at answering it now. I think he almost enjoys answering it and talking about how he was nearly world champion. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's almost like he's become like, well, this is the thing now. This is what I'm looking for. Like, I was nearly world champion. It's not as good as being champ, but it's still something. It keeps him relevant, right? Like, if he'd been neither of those things, neither been world champion or nearly world champion, you'd be like, oh, there's Felipe Massa over there, like, cool, like, good driver. But, like, Interlagos means so much to him and to his story that I think it's made him like a... Like, Sky did a great feature where he was interviewing Timo Glock, and then Timo interviewed Lewis, which was fantastic. Like, you know, you saw those two guys, you know, and Massa had never seen the onboard of Glock's lap until they showed it to him. And he was like, wow, okay. Like... Fair play, like, you probably didn't. You probably had no way of keeping Lewis behind you. They said, I'd never seen it before. And I just thought it was, you know, it's like brand Massa now is like, yeah, I nearly won the championship, guys. So
it's almost like he's got over it, isn't it? And like, the pain is gone.
Yeah, I think he's over it. And now he's like, this is actually pretty fun.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, my dad and my brother, the idiots, they were celebrating. You know, like, I'm not saying, like, it was still, like, heart-wrenching moment, but Massa's always come out of that so well. Yeah, the way he handled it.
Handled himself.
So I think the fact that he can kind of dine off that moment, I think is fair, because, like, him on that podium was always, like, a great moment of just losing with such dignity. So, yeah, fair play to him.
It's funny you should put it that way, though. And especially because Bretta, you've just kind of explained it or like agreed with it, and you know him better with the stuff you've been doing. But Jess interviewed him while we were in Interlagos for an Autosport feature, and she said she got the impression he was like so tired of it, of talking about it, and was saying like there was a point he was like, yeah, I did other things in my career, like I am more than just the guy that did this. So I know what you mean. It kind of, there's times you can lean into it, but I think there's other times he's like, there were races I won as well where I was like really good, or I went through other things. You know, I had a whole career, not just one race in Interlagos.
Jess should have, if Jess had a notepad with her, she should have like gone through like a few pages, and then be like, yeah, hang on, wait, just kept yeah. turning them. Like,
yes, 2010. That's what you want to talk about, wasn't it?
In, 2010. Oh, you don't want to do 2010. Okay, keep going through that. I'll skip 2009. Don't do that one. Singapore 2008. The fuel run. Like there's a few moments in Massa's career that are always talked about. So yeah, like the Fernando one as well. So maybe next time, Lawrence, you just be like, I'm not going to ask you these three things. Let's see what he does
and see what he says.
Probably hug you. Probably just give you a big hug. Or he'll be like, you'd be like, you better ask me about 2008. In fact, that's my thing. I've trademarked 2008 now. That's my year. I own it. Any mention of it, and I get money. I get royalties.
Well, just before we wrap up, I have a funny story I've just remembered about a different Ferrari driver. Very short one, but it was leaving
a short Brazil. Ferrari driver or a short story?
No, all drivers are generally short. Well, they are quite short. Most of them. So it was Charles Leclerc at the airport, and he got mobbed when he was trying to go and drop his bag and check in. Then he got mobbed even more when he got to the security gate where you have to scan your boarding pass to go through. But then he got to where you put all your stuff in the tray and it goes through the scanners. He was at that security queue. And so we were only about five, six people behind him. And two fans that were on flights that had come through too pushed their way past us. We thought because they were late for a flight. No, it was to try and get selfies with Leclerc in this security queue, which Charles did, but you could see he's like, come on. But as soon as they'd done it, the second guy was trying to do his and got it wrong, and he's trying to do it again. And security came over and stopped them. It was like, you can't take photos in here. You're not allowed to take photos in this area. And made them delete the photos that they'd taken.
Oh, my word.
So these, I mean, they still got to jump the queue because they then just went through with their own scanner stuff. So I was a bit miffed at that. But I actually found it as a good bit of karma. Like, there's a time and a place. And 100%. They could have done it through the other side, but they got forced to delete their photos.
It is funny, isn't it, in our job. You get to see drivers posing for so many selfies, and you can totally tell when they just do not want to give one. You know, they'll be walking from, like, they've just crashed out of qualifying, or they just had a bad, and someone's like, can I have a selfie? And you, like, some of them will stop at least, but some will just keep walking but look at the camera. You know, I think I saw Perez doing that at one race. I think maybe it was Canada this year. Like, he literally just kept walking and looked at the guy's camera, then walked off. I don't even know if the guy had time to like hit the photo button, but like, they do get asked so many. So yeah, but that, and like, I've heard stories of them being asked at like restaurants and stuff, and like, I'm sure there's probably been some horror stories, like in a urinal or something like that.
Oh no,
I've got another story, sorry, and it's not a urinal one,
I was gonna say, did someone ask you for a selfie at a urinal? That would be a good story. But
I always do when I see medals at a urinal. I'm like, hey, selfie time.
I did get asked to do a couple of selfies when in Brazil, actually, because we went to an event with Julianne Cerezzoli, who's worked with Banj, the TV company, and she puts on a big event for some fans there. So went there and did some photos. And also leaving the paddock on Sunday night after I finished recording, some guy wanted a selfie but wanted me to be like making it look like I was interviewing him, which is funny. But it was Gunther walking down the paddock and getting stopped all the time for selfies, I think on Saturday or maybe Sunday morning. So I ran in front as well. And went, Gunther, Gunther, and pretended to do a selfie just to take the piss. And he had a proper swing at me with his right foot. He tried to kick me out of the way. Like, he found it funny, but he had a proper go. Jess was like, if that had connected, you'd have a good court case. I thought that was funny too. Because
you'd have been the most unpopular man in F1 if you tried to sue Gunther Steiner. Even if it was completely justified. We'd be like, no, not having that. Not having that.
Good story for the pod though, right? If I'd have been in legal, actually no, I'd have to be like, it's an ongoing court case.
You wouldn't have been able to say anything. It would have been very frustrating.
I feel the point at which it reached made it a good story. Anything beyond that would have been a less good story.
Well, a great note to end on. Meadows nearly getting wounded by Gunther Steiner.
Exactly, episode title right there,
wounded by Steiner.
Well, thanks very much, chaps, as ever. It's been a pleasure. Nate, I'm sorry I won't be seeing you in Abu Dhabi, but we will, I'm sure, catch up after the race and maybe do an in-person podcast at some point before Christmas.
That would be lovely.
Maybe. Medders, I look forward to seeing you very, very shortly. And thanks to everyone who is still listening. We appreciate you listening to your podcast on whatever platform that you do, and for following us on our social channels at The Paddock. You can read Meadows' work on racer.com, Nate's work on ESPN.com, and my work on F1.com, and we'll do this again very, very soon.
Bye.
Bye.